Alexander Scott and Director Smiley, we can take your follow-up questions.
The conference is now in talk mode.
This is Michael Blow from Motif. I asked the question during the televised version about the Wyatt, and we're hearing some things that leave me very skeptical about how effective their methods are being. You know, we've heard, for example, that there were staff at the Wyatt finding out about the eight infections from the press, and people were finding out from their families calling them on the staff, and, you know, I can imagine a correctional officer who gets a call from his wife and says, "Why didn't you tell me this?" And that suggests that maybe contact tracing is not quite as effective or happening with rapidity over there. And given the Department of Health and the state of Rhode Island have developed significant expertise on this and a great deal of trust with the people of the state, is the Department of Health taking a more active involvement with Wyatt and particularly with contact tracing and testing? And to what extent?
So those are excellent points. We're definitely engaging with them to make sure that they have the appropriate guidance specific to the infection control measures that need to be taken, the quarantining and isolation steps that need to be taken. We're communicating with the medical director regularly, having conversations with Marshall there as well. I would need to get back to you on the extent of contact tracing work that we're doing versus them being able to do. We oftentimes partner with facilities that do have the capacity to do it, but ensure that it's being done well. So with the input that you are mentioning, I will circle back to ensure that we are getting the outcomes that we need from a contact tracing and communication standpoint.
What is your recommendation to the Wyatt on how they should treat their staff if they've been exposed? Should staff be put on paid leave if they've been exposed, even if they're not symptomatic, or what should they do?
So all the staff in the facility are being tested, and we're providing the guidance that's consistent with how we handle a person under investigation who has a test that's pending. And in terms of the payment approach and how that's handled, that's something we leave up to employers and the facilities involved. Our focus is to provide the public health guidance and help ensure that it's occurring.
Well, specifically what I'm asking is, what is your guidance if, say, a staff member has been exposed to somebody who's COVID positive and is asymptomatic? Should that staff member continue to go to work? What should they do? What do you recommend they do?
On the role of the staff person, the normal approach, standard approach, is to quarantine. But in situations where we have critical infrastructure workers, we are in alignment with the CDC guidance that provides support for how people can go to work safely and monitor aggressively for symptoms during that quarantine phase. We handle that guidance on a case-by-case basis, depending on the workforce stability and the particular role of the staff involved.
A couple of different questions. I have four different questions. questions from readers asking about the pay raises for various people in the nursing homes and congregate care facilities. And they're asking, is that going to be available to people at Eleanor Slater Hospital, Zamborano, state group homes as well?
No, Kathy. Sorry, Kathy, this is the governor. It is not. It was a program specifically designed to meet the needs of our private sector congregate care providers who are facing extreme issues and work shortages and have many very low paid workers.
Okay, another question following up on what I asked during the press conference. I know you said you're not there yet, even knowing how large the scope of our revenue losses is, but does $630 million come pretty close to what you're looking at now without knowing if you'll get stimulus money to offset that?
Hey, Kathy, it's Brett Smiley. I think $630 million is low if you're counting between the two fiscal years. So between fiscal 20 and fiscal 21, I think it's more than that.
How much more, and how would you break it up between the 2 years since they're different animals?
We don't know how much more. That's what the rec is for, but there's a range of estimates out there, which I'm sure you've seen some of the publicly published ones. And you know, by May 8th, we'll have some sort of opinion coming out of the rec. But it's important to note that even the rec is going to be more imprecise than ever this year, in that the best economists in the world are having a hard time predicting what things like wage growth will be and unemployment will be 6 months from now. So it is going to be an extraordinarily difficult number to pin down, but on May 8th, we'll have at least a number coming out of the conference.
Last question, and then I'll step away so somebody can jump in. Governor, is there any way, shape, or form we can continue with the car tax freeze and phase out? I mean, without a freeze of the phase out.
It seems pretty hard to see how we could, but I don't want to go down the path of looking at any one thing. I know you're asking that because that's politically significant, but
yes.
I think we're way past politics on this one, Kathy. It's going to be a brutal budget, and everything's going to have to be on the table.
Okay. I'm open to hearing anything else you would throw out. That's just a $100 million plus item, which is why I'm throwing it out there, besides being politically significant.
Yeah. I'm not saying yes. I'm not saying no. I'm just saying this is an unprecedented experience that we're all going through. We have lots of people who are unemployed. I don't know. You're pushing me. I would say my principles is we have to do whatever we can to get people back to work, keep people at work, support business, support small businesses, support workers. So to the extent we have any, money available, My guidance would be, we have to stay liquid at all times. We have to operate the government and provide the basic things that we're obligated to provide. And we should continue to make some smart investments, all designed to help Rhode Islanders get a job or keep a job, in light of the fact that we are, our economy is really struggling. But exactly how to do that, I don't know, and frankly, no one knows, and we're not going to know until we receive the federal stimulus. The magnitude of money that could come our way is potentially very significant. We just don't know. If we got $1 billion in stimulus, that's very different than if we got $100 million in stimulus, and those are real numbers that are being floated around.
Hey, Director, this is Eli Sherman for Channel 12. You mentioned that immunizations are down. Can you give us an indication by how much they're down and in what area specifically? And then speaking more broadly, what that might mean down the road, especially in the fall when, some sicknesses are coming up again.
So, yeah, I can give some ranges for hepatitis B vaccine. We've seen a 12% decrease for the polio vaccine. We've seen a 23% decrease for the human papillomavirus vaccine, HPV. We've seen a 42% decrease. I will say that for influenza vaccine, we've seen a 5% increase, but the rest have all had some extent of a decrease ranging from 12% to 42%.
Is that year over year? I'm sorry.
Just now compared to last year. Our numbers for March 2020 may in part be lower due to delays in reporting.
Is that because people aren't visiting doctors? I'm sorry, I was following up on Eli's question. I apologize, Eli. I'm just wondering, what's the working theory? People are just not going to their doctors?
In essence, we want to make sure that routine care is highlighted as an essential activity that people can go out for during the stay-at-home order.
But yes, Kathy, that is the theory, which is why we are hammering home the message, and I would say that to all of you. People are afraid, right? People are afraid to go out. And by the way, we've been telling everyone to stay home. But the message we want to get to people is, you know, doctor's offices are open, the emergency room is open, the hospitals are open, and if you need care, you should go get it. We're trying to give people the confidence that it's okay to go to the doctor if you need
to. To that end, I think I can guess, but what is the fallout from having immunizations being down?
Yeah, I think your guesses would be accurate because it's a wide range. Certainly concerns for increases in cases connected to those vaccine-preventable diseases. One of the benefits is that we are a state that already had a high vaccination rate, particularly for children. Across many of these, we've been number one. So that gives us some cover, but it is important for us to make the message clear right now that going to get your vaccines and conducting other routine medical care activities and addressing those needs is important to do during this time. It is part of the essential activity that we say is okay to do during the stay-at-home order.
Thank you. Governor, can you follow up on the hopeful image? And you may have covered that, but were there several images submitted, or how was that selected? And if you could just touch on again what that represents.
So I just called Shepherd Ferry a month or so ago, a few weeks ago, I can't remember now. You know, he's a RISD grad, and he's a very well-known artist, and I was kind of in the depths of this, to be honest, and I thought everybody could use a little bit of hope, so I asked him if he would, you know, volunteer his services and create an image that he thought would be hopeful, and this is what he came up with. And, you know, he says it's to, like it says, to celebrate the courage of healthcare workers specifically and generally symbolize the spirit of hope, strength, and compassion and resilience. So it's all his artistry, and I saw it, and I think it's beautiful. To me, in addition to the fact that it's a symbol of hope and strength, I see it, and I feel like it's really a nod to all of our first responders and healthcare workers, and a big thank you from us to them, because, you know, it reminds me a little of Rosie the Riveter.
What are the rights? I'm sorry.
Follow up. Is the image in that under the age of 60? And what about, I mean, there are first responders who are people of color that are men, that are Latino, that are older. Is there any thought to maybe something that kind of more representative of all the frontline workers?
First of all, I don't know that you know that she's white. It's an image, and it's a black and white and red, you know, thing. It's art. You can look into it whatever you want to see. By the way, if somebody wanted to do another image, that's exactly why I launched the whole other website. Hopefully right. Other people will, you know, put up other images, and that would be great.
Yes. Could be a virtual gallery. I like the idea.
Yeah, exactly. A mosaic. Is that about
it? What are the rights and royalties?
No royalties. All free. No one's making any money.
Dr. Alexander Scott, Ted Nisi, I heard from some people, not just other reporters, after they saw the governor's comments on letting reporters back in the briefing room after May 9th, and I know all of you kept citing safety and the five people to a room thing.
what will be your recommendation if the stay-at-home order is lifted? Will you allow, or, you know, will you say it's okay for some reporters to be back in the room asking our own questions?
You stumped her, Ted. She's looking at me angrily that I suggested that might be possible.
Well, you know, I'm more on the governor's side on that one as a lot of reporters. I mean, we see Baker, we see Cuomo, we see the White House. There does seem to be ways we could combine social distancing with the ability of independent journalists to directly ask their own questions. I know there's a lot on all their plates, but especially if the stay-at-home order lifts, it's going to get harder for us to, to accept that.
I'll let Nicole answer it. But I would say I would like to find a way, just like I said to you last night. There's got to be a way. We'll figure something out.
Yeah, and from our public health perspective, being able to stick with the guidance in terms of the size, the number of people that are coming together, being as limited as possible, making sure that the social distancing measures are appropriately in place. It's all going to be part of our phasing in the reopening of the economy. We'll be taking steps and thinking of creative ways to allow for key activities like this to occur, but making sure that we're able to keep doing it safely.
I will commit to, I'll ask my comms people to get with you guys. All right, everyone. Thank you, and we'll be back tomorrow.